Again, I would like to dedicate this year for a refuah shalema for two sick ladies. One is Chaya Simcha Bas Janet Jamila, who from the local community has had to go to America for an operation. And another is a little girl with a pituitary gland tumor. Her name is Tzivia Bas Yehudis. May our learning, Be'ezus Hashem, be a source of merit for them, and may they have a speedy refuah shalema. Okay. It's absolutely such an exciting thing to be able to say, just a bit of revision for what we did last week. Just listen to this. I hope this is recording. A lot of people told me they couldn't be here. They really wanted to be here. They said, I must make sure it's recording. It does seem to be recording at the moment. Last week, we ended up talking about the... Now, if you've missed last week, you have to catch up on the download. It's not going to be repeated, and it was vital stuff. It was just a standalone stuff. And we finished off talking about the differences between a reincarnation, a hijack, a possession, a dibuk, and an ibor, a gestation that the womb has. Yeah, not the womb. Obviously, wombs always have gestations. But the soul has a gestated soul that piggybacks on it for a particular purpose. And we made a very clear differentiation what the difference between those things were. Okay, a dibuk is where a soul who has been cast off into true Jewish hell. That's not Gehenna. Gehenna is merely a laundrette, which uses persil to remove impurities that are stuck in the fabric of the soul. And that persil is made up of suffering. Suffering loosens the insensitivity that sullies the soul, as we discussed earlier. That's Gehenna. True Jewish hell is being cast off when you turn up with a tablecloth to the dry cleaners. They just say, forget it, we're not going to clean it. We're just not interested. This is a wasted tablecloth. It's not worth the money you're going to put in to clean it to get it clean. God then literally crumples that up, throws it out into the bin, as it were, and that soul is said to be in hell. We did say that due to a number of redundancies and systems that are in place, the number of people that are actually affected by this is so small to be statistically insignificant. However, there are such people, Rahman al-Aslan al-Alainu, really severe position. Those souls that are disembodied and not allowed to go into the soul, they're just literally dumped, need a repose, and we said that the best possible repose for a soul is a body. It's designed specifically to fit in that. So if it finds a body which has a kink in its armor and it can get in, it'll hijack the soul's position. And we talked about what different parts of the body are linked spiritually to different parts of the soul, which is specifically made for it as tendrils, as it were, which click into different parts of the body. You don't get some of them until you're 13 or 12, if you're a boy or a girl. You don't get the neshama's activity until your bar bas mitzvah. We talked about what different parts of the body. Again, if you're listening to this on the tape, you're going, wow, I've never heard this before. Listen to last week's download. So we did that, and we made sure that we understand the difference between that. We've got to know, we've talked about Gilgul previously. Gilgul is a transmigration. Okay, it's mentioned in the Siddur. At the bedtime Shema, okay? It's just an absolutely standard concept, yeah? That is where the soul comes back for legalistic reasons to fix up things it should have done in this go but didn't and has some kind of justifiable cause to come back. However, we learned that when you come back to the casino, you can lose your gutkas. You can mummish lose it, or you can burn the money that you had in escrow previously. So it's a tremendous risk. This then discusses the difference about birth defects, etc., that was discussed, etc., that some could come in with a defect that could prevent them from losing you. Let's say they've got a problem with Lashon Hara, and Hashem says, look, you're going to have to go back for a second round in there. Okay, but I'm scared about saying Lashon Hara. Well, there's a cure for that. You don't have to be able to speak, right? If you're going to come back to do certain mitzvahs, then we talked about that. The Derech Hashem actually talked about openly infant mortality. That's a very heavy topic to discuss. But that's within the realm of Gilgul. That's not within Dibuk or Ibor. Dibuk is possession. What's Ibor? What is Ibor? Ibor is where a soul piggybacks on with someone else. Now, we all get an Ibor at Shabbos and Yom Tov. There's the concept of the Neshama Yisera, an enhanced or additional soul, which leaves at Havdalah. Everyone has heard of this concept, or at least if you haven't, it's in there and we talked about it. And it's certainly on the last download. Have I said that enough now? And something about the last download, I think. Is it John drops a very serious insight? Yes, I am. And so that's where an additional spiritual element is temporarily added on to assist the soul in the body or to gain its own benefit. For instance, we talked about an individual who doesn't lay tefillin. And then he dies. And then his grandson does lay tefillin. It could be, and that's actually one of the examples that I mentioned, that grandfather, if he is meritorious to do so, joins in with the grandson while the grandson lays the tefillin. And it is as if the grandfather is still involved because he's quasi-associated with the body, that part of the merit goes to him because at the end of the day, he's got his grandson. His grandson is a legacy for him. As who was that? Yeah, who was that man that gave the schmooze just after Maariv? We talked about Shmuel Schwartz. Yeah. So he said a beautiful thing about the fact that I know the living from the dead. If I can see what a guy is now, it must be a good parentage or good grandparentage, etc. If an individual is going on and putting on tefillin, there's got to be some schus there. It could be. That doesn't always happen. I'm not saying every time you put on tefillin, you're putting on tefillin with all your ancestors. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that if it does happen, that is an example of an ibor. We talked about how Pinchas had a Phineas. If you want to translate that, there's no point translating it because it's worse in Latin. But so Pinchas, when he took the spear to go and kill Cosby and Dina, Cosby and Zimri, I do apologize, not Dina, Cosby and Zimri, he had an ibor of Nadav and Avihu. He had a gestated souls, as it were, of the sons of Aaron, Nadav and Avihu, who helped him. We talked all about that at the end of last week's share. There's already a good... No, this is just revision. This is just revision. It's just revision. It's just... Ah, go on then. I got what had it.
About the dibbuk, a discarded soul, until it infiltrates or hijacks another a body... Where does it exist? Because obviously it can't exist in the soul, the world of the soul.
It's not allowed in. It's not allowed. So just to talk about it, the soul world, Clive is saying, where is this discarded junk soul? And the answer is, it's not allowed to get into the soul world, which is where it now belongs, being disembodied. The soul world only has three postcodes. One postcode is Gehenna, literally purgatory, or the valley of judgment, if you really want to call it that. Okay. Another postcode is Lower Gan Eden, Gan Eden Tachtoin. And the top is Gan Eden Elyon. That's Gan Eden Elite. That's the upper Gan Eden. What's going on there? I think we already discussed this, but now that you brought it up, Gehenna is where it goes through a purging process in order to remove the desensitivity, which will allow it to enter Gan Eden. Gan Eden's a recharge. While the body rots, the soul needs to recharge so it can be rejoined with the body at Techiyas HaMeisim, okay, which everyone's going to experience at Yom HaDin HaGadol. Everyone, every Jew, every Gentile is going to get resurrected. Everybody for the great day of judgment. Okay, that's where God will literally bring humanity to task. So, right, let's talk about it from Adam to the end. Everyone's going to get that. Now, in Gan Eden, Tachton, in Lower Gan Eden, the soul is still within the form of the body that it inhabited. So much, I always talked about it, about the Mr. Plasticine men, you know, with those guys, those toys, and they have a mold and you stuff them full of Play-Doh. And you squidge it really hard, then you take the mold away, and they're like little Play-Doh men. I can't believe the things I have mined since I've started. I've done dried ends of cucumbers, deer antlers. I've done really interesting things. Sea cucumbers, I think I did once. Okay, now I've done little Play-Doh men. Now, those little Play-Doh, the soul, because it's associated with the body, still is visible and recognizable as the physical body that it inhabited. That's Gan Eden Tachtoin. Once you start pulling the sheet tight, it loses any physical form whatsoever, and that's how the souls exist in Gan Eden Elyon, in Upper Gan Eden. These Dibbuk souls are just knocking about this world. Literally milk without a bottle.
This world.
This is as low as you can get. You can't get lower than this world. Gehenna is up from here. That's an elevator ride up.
So are these ghosts?
Are these ghosts? You could say that they would be responsible for what we consider to be poltergeist activity. Are they ghosts? Whether we have the term ghosts, etc., we don't usually... There are ghosts, what we would call ghosts, mentioned in the Gemara, of basically bodies which haven't yet quite left this world. Okay? Poltergeist activity could be explained from our sources as these souls which basically are in limbo. They aren't going anywhere. They should be being processed, but for one reason or other, they're not being processed. I can't really take much more time out of it. Do you need a book? Who here, who's just come in, needs a safer? Excellent, James.
Why didn't Hashem just completely destroy his soul instead of letting them wander back?
That's the punishment. The snake. What did God say? Sorry, for the tape. Why doesn't God actually obliterate or shred these? So, you know, in a big shred paper basket thing. And what, I can't even do that. It's a soul shredder. A ginormous soul shredder. That was a good mime, wasn't it? Shredding a soul in heaven. Good question. No, it's like this. The snake, which lied, which misrepresented God, got punished. And what did God say? Go on the ground, and your food will be right in front of you. Snakes eat mice and rodents and everything like that. Why? Because I don't want you to call out to me. I want no relationship with you. I don't want to hear from you. Don't dab onto me. Don't ask for anything. Don't say anything to me. I don't want to hear from you. You're on the ground. You have your mice. You eat. You leave me alone. That's hell. End of relationship. Gehenna's not an end of relationship. Gehenna's a cleaning process to get out of it. Hell is, he ain't interested. He's not going to do that. He's not pernicious. He's not going to grill you and then dump you. He just doesn't want a relationship with that being. He doesn't want a relationship with that. The snake is in perpetual quote unquote hell. That's what happened. Notice that's why it's constantly sticking its tongue out and going shh the whole time, the Gemara explains. Sticking its tongue out to show the tongue is the organ which failed, and it's constantly saying be quiet. It's constantly going shh to teach you to be quiet, because Rashi explains that if you want people to quiet down, you make a hissing sound. The snake does that perpetually to teach you. If you want to say Lashon Hara, by the way, Kodesh Baruch Hu says the Bel Lashon Hara in Shemaim, I created the only organ in your body which is created totally horizontally. Is the tongue. It sits in the mouth behind the hardest possible material in your body, the enamel. And then that's covered by the lips. What more can I do to tell you to think before you speak? The natural state of the tongue is at rest. It's a muscle which is just flat. Yeah? Okay, I'm going to consider... Everyone comfortable? You got what you need? Do you need anything? Pens, papers, coffee? Biscuits, crisps. If you'd like to visit the crisp station, is by Adrian. There are sometimes biscuits as well, but he didn't bring. But no more. If George, you want to pass them down? Do you want some? No, Adrian, you got off lucky. You know he need. Okay, he need. Look, if he needs it, he needs it. He's got to have it. Okay, people need it. That's okay. We're now on page 187, and we are on page 187, and I think we were halfway through point four. Yeah, this is really important. Okay, I'm going to roll back to halfway through point four. How much divine soul a person possesses can vary. On Shabbos, he receives an additional soul. This is what now? What do we call an additional soul? What type of modulation of soul do we call this? What's the technical term? Jewish philosophy calls students? Ibor. Very, very good. Award yourselves 10 points whoever thought of Ibor. If you thought of Gilgal, take 10 points away. Or maybe you should do it again. Oh, come on, that's such a good Jewish philosophy joke. If you thought of Gilgal, you should do it again. Good now, I'll save it for the end. I've got a weak finish. Okay, here we go. I'm going to start now, halfway down, all right? You know, I really try, but it's not easy to crack Jewish philosophy jokes to an advanced crew. It is possible for some of these parts of the soul, I've checked the word remove, please replace it with the word disassociate or dislocate. But it is not a full removal. A full removal is what we call death, okay? A disassociation or dislocation is better. It also fits better with the actual vibe of the original Hebrew. So it's possible for the soul to disassociate or dislocate themselves at various times and later return. It is also possible that levels add themselves to a person's soul and then leave. You can write in there, Ibor. All this can happen with absolutely no physical, visible effect on the body whatsoever. You don't grow another leg or something to accommodate the soul, because why? Because the leg is enlivened by the Nefesh Bahamas, the animalistic soul, which is genetically encoded. You can live a perfectly good physical life on this earth without an neshama. That's how you can get koresh, that's how you can be spiritually excommunicated. Where we talked about the guy drinking the blood that comes out the neck of the animal as it's being slaughtered, and the cow soul infests his body. The top soul of humanity cannot bear to be with a bovine soul, so it recoils in disgust. That's what kores is. That's what spiritual excommunication is. That's the outcome. I know I've got quite a lot of emails about that, But the point is that you can live a perfectly good natural life just with a totally physical, genetically encoded body. Okay? Not good for long-term spirituality. You can always do teshuva, though. You can always reconnect your neshama with teshuva. Always. No gate is closed to teshuva, to repentance.
There's a quick, is the temporary removing the soul what we talk about when we go to sleep?
Oh, we are going to talk. You are so ahead of game plan. That's the next paragraph. You can't steal my thunder, Andy. I'm working so hard here. If you could highlight the next sentence, brilliant. Andy, as ever, you're right on the ball. Just means you're brilliantly ahead of game plan. If you highlight these higher souls, Neshama, Chaya, Yechida, and Ibor, whatever they are, do not have any detectable influence on the body and do not add to or subtract from man's vitality or sensations. You will not find them if you scan the brain with a positron emission tomography scanner. You won't see the neshama. What the neshama does is innovate the mind, it interfaces with the mind to try to get the brain to have signals to do mitzvahs and avoid avirus. It sends pleasure signals to the body when you do mitzvahs and when you avoid avirus. But it is not in the body. We said that the neshama is in the body like we are in our shoes. It dips in. And the Rambam added to that, saying that that only happens in our generation while we're doing a mitzvah or at Ne'ilah at Yom Kippur, even if you're not doing any mitzvahs. Because we're so lowly that he died over 1,000 years ago. And he said that's the generation they were in. How much more so us? We're lucky we get a Ne'ilah Yom Kippur. Okay, that was the highlight line. End highlight. The only function of these higher souls, Neshama, Chaya, Yechida, from our special soul. Everyone here should have a picture of the six soul bits, right? You know what I'm talking about, the circles of the souls. The only function of these higher souls is with respect to man's true essence, the upstairs element, an appropriate association with the highest roots. That's because the higher levels of the souls are our channel into the kaichas. Because the kaichas, the primordial forces in Olam HaBriya, in the world of creation, the end of that is the very, very top of soul. That's what. So souls are higher than angels. Because, you know what I'm talking about? Does everyone, let me just, if I can get two pictures here, just very clearly. Okay, so we should have two things in our mind here. Again, it's very difficult to learn this stuff without some kind of pictorial reference, okay? Here are the levels of the soul, and here are the four worlds, okay? We've seen, most people have seen this. Now, the bottom of the levels of the soul are all genetically encoded. We share the same with beluga whales, chimpanzees, etc., etc. Now, from the neshama is not part of the kaichas. The yechida is. The yechida is part of the kaichas. Elaine, do you need one of these? You have that one. I'll take another one. Why not? Because I've got another one, right? Craig, do you have one of these? You don't, do you not? How did you not get one? Oh, of course you didn't get one. Okay, fine. I hope I've got an infinite supply here. And look at this, I have this. So, okay, so the yechida, which is at the top, which is the fingerprint of the soul, is actually the bottom of one of the tendrils of the koichas in Olam HaBriya, in the world of creation. Remember, angels only exist in Olam HaYetzira, the world of formation. So our souls are connected to something which is more lofty than even the most lofty angel, according to Jewish tradition. I'm not telling you what to believe. I want you to know cold what classical Jewish sources say about it. If someone asks you, you could say, this is not my particular belief, I don't care, I think we all live on a massive, ginormous grapefruit, and there's a worm inside the grapefruit which eventually will end time. Think what you like! But know this material cold, because you are its legacy, you are its harbouring. As someone who asks you, you should know about it, okay? You will end up being those that answer questions. So the yechida, which is the fingerprint identity of the soul, is actually the bottom of the kaichas, okay? The part, now what he's saying here is that the function of these higher souls is not to give you consciousness, is not to give you emotions, is not to give you intellectual reason. They are there in order to appropriate the association to the highest roots. So there's a connection between you. Now remember, when we talked in this particular picture about John and Bob at the bottom, John is the bloke and Bob the mallard. Remember that? Now, John was told not to chop down the cherry tree. And John's wife, Mammy, we gotta have the coffee table. And they've got a coffee table. And what, you're good for nothing, get an axe. And days and days went by, and he finally succumbed to chop down the cherry tree. Which means he didn't have Vera. Now, his actions went upstairs. That was an indeterministic influence, if you remember. A bottom-up influence. And those influences had ramifications. If you do something wrong, you do something right, it has ramifications. How do these things have ramifications? Because the soul is connected all the way up. The soul is connected all the way to the top. That's why what we do matters, and that's why what animals do doesn't. If a whale decides, you know what, today I'm going to have Chicken Appreciation Day. I don't think enough whales really value the benefit the chickens give the universe. So I would like to cluck four times at 3 o'clock. I've got a very large Swiss watch here, and very large. And I will go cluck, 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 and we'll all get together and we will talk about you. We will think about chickens. Well, it doesn't matter. Even if they were to do that, it wouldn't help the general cause. It may help them. It may help them think more passionately and more empathetically so they could get on with the job of catching krill or whatever it is they're doing. But at the end of the day, it doesn't change anything in Bria. Humans do that. Human choices change things, okay? And that's because they're connected to a higher plug-in. This does make sense within itself. This concept includes the additional soul that arrives on Shabbos and leaves when Shabbos ends, known as the Neshama Yisera. Its coming and going are also not detectable in the body. The body can receive the enhancement, as it were, without any change. It doesn't need to change because the body's only there to accept the regular human soul.
What can therefore on when we're at the end of Shabbos, why do we smell the spices? And as we said earlier on, that when the Shabbos soul leaves, we need to revive ourselves. Mm-hmm. So if it has no effect on the body, where is the necessity to actually smell spices?
Why is it that we smell? Sorry, the question that is coming in from the left is that if it's really true, Rabbi, that it doesn't have any effect on the soul, why then is the Havdalah ritual including the smelling of the spices, which is specifically meant to calm or placate the soul, losing the more ethereal Neshama Yisrael, which has now left Motzi Shabbos, which doesn't leave Motzi Yontif? You keep your Neshama Yisrael Motzi Yontif, unless you do an Aveira, which pushes it away. So the kasha is, why do we smell, why did Chazal make a takana, a fixing of Havdalah, that we have to smell spices? The answer is, why don't we have a bath? Why don't we have a foot massage? Why don't we eat a meal specifically to placate the soul? Why would we smell, Clive?
I thought it was also to revive the body as well as the soul.
Well, how does smell revive you? Yeah, if a woman faints, you give her smelling salts, right? But what is smell?
We smell sweet spices.
The bottom line, without taking too much time out of this, the point is like this. Believe it or not, the pituitary gland, actually, we mentioned this guy, is actually technically not part of the brain. But the olfactory bulb is. The olfactory bulb is a protrusion of the brain itself, which sits at the top of a bony ridge inside one's skull. And the smell chemicals, the flavoids, aromatic rings, whatever they are, that hit it, are detected and very, very quickly go straight into the middle of the brain. Smell is the most ruchnius, smell is the most spiritual of all senses, in the fact that it's incredibly fleeting and thin. When we eat food, there's a bracha before we eat, and there's a bracha after we eat. When we smell anything that's pleasant, that is designed to be smelt, it's a bosom, you have to make a bracha. Over smelling fruit, it's an osen reich tov papyrus, okay? Over plants which have a hard stem, it's berei atzei v'somim. Over plants with a thin, weak stem, it's berei isfei v'somim. Over mixtures that we're not sure about, it's berei minei v'somim. Some say over hot bread. You should make Hanosen Reich Tov Papas, who gives bread a beautiful smell. In fact, there's a machlokes on that Ashkenazim don't actually pick up hot bread with the right hand in order to smell it, because we're not sure whether or not we need to make a brocha with it. But there's never an after brocha for a smell. The reason for that is, it's so thin, there's hardly any great benefit to it. It is so fleeting that it disappears immediately. It is therefore more spiritual in nature. Because the soul leaves and the neshama detects that, although we don't detect that, we smell in order to show the spiritual component of the loss. Notice when we give a korban, when we give an offering in the temple, Hashem says, a reich nechayach laHashem, a beautiful fragrance to Hashem. Don't think you're feeding God with a sacrifice or an offering. He don't need to eat. What you're doing is like a sweet savour is that you're fulfilling a command. You're totally justifying your actions in front of him to try to repatriate the system that you're in. Why? Dafka, that involves animals, and what animals? The Rambam has an incredible treatise, and so does the Al-Shech and the Aram HaKadosh, as to what different animals are involved for different sins, whether it be birds, goats, sheep, cows, etc. You can learn out, because a goat, when it gores, gores upwards, while a cow gores sideways. So a cow is given for sins where you've sinned against your fellow man, while a goat gores upwards, which is sins against God, while a bird constantly tweets, which is sins where you've misused the power of your speech. All those things is very, very specific, etc., etc., and what their blood does, and why I have to be put on different corners of Mizbech at different times, and why, what the Levim have to sing at that particular time is a particular resonance that's going on. I may even bring a guitar at one stage and actually show you the major 7 minor 7th resonance to show you what I'm talking about with the root. Fascinating stuff to do with that. The point is it's spiritual. And there is a loss when you lose an Ibor, and the smell is the most spiritual of senses, and the fact that it's so fleeting, so thin, like spirituality in our lives. I can't take any more questions on that point. Okay, black and white, I didn't make this up. I'm not pretending. I didn't just pull this out underneath my yarmulke and just tell this to you because I thought it was interesting. Right here, he says it. We're at page 187, just before indent number 5. The soul is thus divided into 5 parts. They are the nefesh, the ruach, neshama, chaya, and yechida. Wow, just like the picture. Whew, that's a bit of a relief. Otherwise, we would have had copyright issues. Excuse me, I think that you haven't quite correctly... Whew, it does say it, people. I'm not making it up. All right. Now, this divine soul on the level of the neshama, which, remember, is the break point between upper and lower. The neshama can talk to and interface with, as it were, the lower elements of the soul that get it to do stuff like pick up lost objects. And it also has a relationship with head office. It's middle management. The neshama is middle management. It has a relationship with head office. Neshama and yirachayr and yechidah stuff, like do sometimes hobnob and brush shoulders with the soul. We'll talk about when. So it's the connector between upper and lower. Now, why is that important? The divine soul on the level of neshama also has experiences relating to its unique phenomenological nature as to where it is in the chain. This whole group of all these soul bits are considered one soul. When you talk about the human soul, all the circles there are one soul. But its components, they've got chained, linked components, right? We talked about that last time. They're links in a chain. Even though it's bound to the body to an extent, I would add, obviously not as bound to the body as the ruach or the nefesh bahamas, which is actually the highest fraction of the body, it still has some access to the spiritual, which is the chaya and yechida, which is not precluded by its association with the body. Because it's so lofty versus the body, remember, the very first of these shiurim, we used the telescopic idea, and we use this picture over here to talk about how the outside of A is very external and the inside of A is very refined and internal. And we use the Hebrew words chitzonius, externality, and panemius, internality. And we said that up going through the telescope, the outside, the chitzonius, the externality of B is very, very lofty in relation even to the internality of A, let alone the externality of A. It wouldn't be seen dead with the externality of A. It just doesn't walk down those, it won't shop there. Okay? It's just not, you're not going to find it in Waitrose. Now, C, if you look at the internality of C, he would never even be seen with the internality of B, let alone the externality of B. And talking about A is just purely ridiculous. Plebeian. Right? Are you with me on this? We did talk about this. Remember, I think you saw this. This neshama, which is in the middle, has a little bit of a finger in both pies. The spiritual association of the soul, the neshama, however, has only a minimal effect on the human mind and its thoughts, just enough to act as its yetzer hatov, as its inclination to do good. Our sages thus teach us, even though a person does not see something, his destiny, his mazal, now mazal is the Hebrew word for constellation. His destiny, mazal really means flow. Nozel is a tap in Hebrew. I just took that in modern Hebrew and just changed that. Like chashmal is electricity, it's actually a level of angelic force. Chashmal, amazing. Ben, you heard of what he did with it. What this means is that the matters of the higher worlds, i.e. the koichus, in Olam HaBriya and Olam HaYetzirah, do indeed reach what the soul can reach. The soul can somehow pick up the radio waves in shortwave, which is an unusual wave, of what's going on upstairs. But they don't reach down to man's thoughts. Now let's look at this. Man's brain. When you're thinking, I want a cup of coffee, I want to put on a nice comfortable pair of shoes, where 99.9% recurring of the time do those thoughts emanate from all the spheres of the soul? Where are they coming from? Don't all shout at once because I can't take it. If you all, I can't hear you all if you scream at once. So, the goof, possibly if you're cold, but generally your consciousness, what gives you feelings and intellect, is all coming from the Nefesh Bahamas. That's your consciousness. Indeed, your consciousness is the measurable part of consciousness measured by biopsychologists, is the Nefesh Bahamas.
Point to where you mean.
Oh, point to where I mean, thank you. Okay, I feel like one of those stewardesses at the plane. You know, so this is what I mean. This bit over here. And the top bit, which is the more intellectual side of it. The emotionality, intellect, is all coming from the Nefesh Bahamas. Right? 99.9% of the time, it's coming from Nefesh Bahamas. Okay? Now, the stuff that the neshama can plug into is right at the top. It's at the bottom of the koichas. It's higher than the... It's two planes up. Now, when the neshama gets some of this data, even though it may be able to understand it, and it's even lofty for it, getting it to you is a crazy mission. Think about it. If he was all the way up here, right, he's like A, B, C. He's C on the telescope. But he has access to D and E. Yeah? Now, if he hears something with a great finding D, which is so ridiculous when it comes to A, I mean, it's like, you know what it's like? How can I give you this example? It's like a Joe on the street. I tell you something that I remember reading in a paper. Years and years and years ago, just before Diana was assassinated, an interesting thing happened. There was a case of a radio ham who bought from Tandy. I don't know if you remember, there was like a Radio Shack type store in England called Tandy that sold electronics. And one of the things they sold was like a radio ham kind of scanner. It's a radio scanner. You could still buy them today. They're actually more expensive today than they used to be. And you could literally just scan the airwaves. And there was this guy sitting at home and he was just playing around with his family and he tapped into the conversation of Diana with her boyfriend, where they were talking quite smoochily about how they behaved with each other. Now, the problem was, is that she'd already been assassinated that day. But the conversation was live. And there was left and right, and they didn't believe him. It turned out the GCHQ, which is the General Command Headquarters, it's the NSA of England, recorded every phone call they could of Diana and beamed them back to base to record them on different machines. And they were sending those conversations after she was dead. And he had tapped into that and said, but I've heard her talking. I remember that was an amazing thing. And it came out after a very long, what was going on? And they didn't believe. Turned out indeed he did hear it. That's because they'd recorded it and they were beaming it over the airwaves somewhere else. And he managed to tap into that. It wasn't a secure channel. It was on radio. It was analog back in those days. It wasn't digital. It wasn't encrypted. So anyone with the equipment could get into it. Do you hear that? That's an interesting example. She was already dead. But she was talking. He was like, how could it be? Because frankly, we already knew that. And we're secretly keeping a whole dossier on her. Apparently she had one of the thickest dossiers. One of the GCHQ people said she had one of the thickest files they had was on her. You know, every move she made. Now, let's say you're an Ashoma. Your Neshama starts tapping into Lemoshel these transfers of data. Now, you're not a guy in GCHQ. You don't know what's going on. To you, you think, well, there's a woman talking on the phone to her boyfriend. That's it. That's all there is to talk about. There's not, no, she's dead, and she's been assassinated, and she's being spied on, and the spy agencies are... That's just too complicated to get, right? A regular guy on the street does not understand how GCHQ works. That's because they don't have the clearances, they're not the classified. Do you understand what I'm saying? The Neshama has a certain level of classified data. It has clearance to a much higher level than your Nefesh Bahamas does. Nefesh Bahamas is just a genetic thing. It's physical. Ugh. It's blood and guts. It's real. Physical. The Neshama's extremely lofty, but it can hear this data. And when it gets this data, it can retain that data and give it back to you, and you and your Nefesh HaSichlis, which is genetic, can start to pick up certain fragments of that data. You can get hold of some of this. There's a guy sitting around, he's just some farmer, sitting around with his family around, you know, this radio scanner, and he's hopping onto what GCHQ are transmitting. Not that he understands it, but he is gaining access. Are you getting this? Is everyone too cold, too hot? Is everyone environmentally okay? Because I'm just looking at glare. What is he talking about tonight? That's really quite good. I think we all know, really? What is he on about? Worse than usual. I need the brakes too, you know. Now, so you got this physical thing at the bottom, receiving this data, and it has no security clearance. It's some guy in the street. And then Shoma's heard, Diana is having a conversation with her boyfriend.
He's like, what? What, the Diana?
Yeah, Diana's having a conversation. I thought she was shot or something. No, I'm telling you, she's having a conversation right now. Now, it can't put two and two together, but you get a feeling, a sense, a schmack, an intuition, some kind of sense that something is up. Someone who can't be here tonight, desperately wanted to be here, had a dream. I'm just going to go through the dream, if that person doesn't mind.
It's terrible, how could you be so mean?
This person had a dream of a place they'd never seen, which was a business. Let's call the business Burger Bob's. Burger Bob had a very, very vivid dream about Burger Bob. Oh, and they saw themselves flipping burgers at Burger Bob. And they were doing great. The money was, the cash machines was overloaded. It was fantastic. Burger Bob. Okay. The person wakes up, tells their spouse, if you ever see a burger place called Burger Bob, we should buy it because we'll make loads of money. Okay, it's fine.
Please keep all phones off.
Okay, about 6 weeks later, this person's spouse happens to hear through the grapevine that there's a burger joint called Burger Bobby's. Burger Bobby's that's come up for lease. It's not exactly the same name, but it's almost the same name. And it's come up for lease. And they're looking for someone to take over. So the spouse phones the other person and says, do you remember the dream you told me about? It's not Burger Bob's, it's Burger Bobby's. That person said, no, it's Burger Bob's. You've got to do this. But no, I'm telling you, Burger Bobby's has just come up. Split second decision. What should we do? They didn't even go to see the place. They signed on the lease over the phone. And for over 4 years, they ran the burger joint and made a fortune of cash. I think it stayed as Burger Bobby's. They did well. Now the kasher is, what happened there? What happened there? Possibly nothing. But what could have happened is as follows. Notice, Chazal say in Gemara Brochus, there is no dream without some worthless stubble in it. No dream without stubble. There's always some white noise data. Whenever you tap into a wavelength, there's always some background noise. You can't get rid of it. Now, did you know it wasn't a mind, that was sound. That was a sound effect. Why can't you get rid of that? Because your neshama, your ruach, and your nefesh bahamis, the lower elements of the soul, are always confused. Compared to what's going on with the chayim yechida. But something came through. Instead of being Burger Bob, it was Burger Bobby. But it was something around that, right? But the mazal saw this is a wonderful way to get a bracha. They didn't know how it worked. They weren't sure of it. If it was indeed, if, and I'm not saying it was, it's a person I know is going to be listening. But if it was indeed something that they hopped onto from upstairs, then that's the method of approach. That's how it would have happened. The neshama is knocking about with, now, when can the neshama knock about with all these highfalutin aristocrats, the chay and the yechida? When it's asleep. Now, why? When it's asleep. Why? Because while you're alive doing stuff, the neshama's at work. It's at work. It's busy. It's in the office. It's doing stuff. It's trying to inspire you to get close to the Kodesh Baruch Hu for its benefit and yours. Yours being the physical body. Because the role of the neshama is to purify the body, and the role of the body is to be purified by the neshama. But when it's not on duty, it doesn't go down the path. It goes back to where its source is, which is higher. Now, while it's there, it can overhear data. It can eavesdrop. Not that it fully understands what it hears. What it can bring back then has to be processed in a physical gyrus and sulcide brain, a physical lump of nervous tissue, which is incredibly, incredibly finite and limited. And the imagination part of that brain can correlate that data to something it can understand. But there's always going to be mess, there's always going to be white noise, there's always going to be drivel associated with that. Let's look at Pharaoh's dreams. I've got to discuss this with you. Pharaoh has very perplexing dreams. He says like this. Woke up, and I remember I had a terrible, amazing dream. He woke up in the morning. We'll talk about it. I'm going to do it. I have in front of me a hand-drawn sheet of an old piece of equipment called a graphic equalizer. What I really wanted to do, I had this whole thing. My daughter was going to help me with a cardboard box. It's have like these as slits, and I have magnets at the back that I could kind of puppeteer and move the dials up and down. Do you remember graphic equalizers? I don't know if you know what we're talking about. It's like a big bar with lots of sliders on, and you can move the sliders up and down. You can boost or cut various frequencies, okay? Here, the graphic equalizer is set all to neutral, okay? Except rather than having frequencies of sound controlled by the graphic equalizer, I've got frequencies of soul. How cool. I don't mean the music, obviously. I mean spiritually, because it's a Jewish philosophy course. For those people listening, it's a Jewish thing. So now, what are the three frequencies that count? Body, soul, spiritual world. Now hear me here. Don't have cheese before bed. Anyone ever heard that? Why is that? Because cheese is psychoactive. So is chocolate and beer. Chocolate, beer and cheese are psychoactive. You can get, you know, bad dreams or whatever. Just whatever, it's psychoactive. When the liver is processing chemicals in the body, it can send through goodness knows what up to your head and drive you bonkers. You have these really weird dreams where you're running away from a whale and trying to push a lobster up a hill with your nose. At least that's what I get. They shouldn't have revealed that to you. You know, I think we're learning a little bit too much about you. I know, we've got close after all these hours. Do you have whales chasing you up the road? Yeah, it's terrible. My God, it's a huge whale. That's because I had cheers before bed. It just is a product of the physical process of my body. That's type one. That's data type one. Data type two is what I'm thinking about all day. What am I thinking about? What am I musing about? What am I ruminating over? I've got to do this. I've got to do that. I'm busy at work. I've got to make a chair. I've got to fix a guitar. Whatever you're thinking about. So that, because the soul is busy thinking about that too, because it's associated with your body, then when you go to sleep, it starts thinking about guitars and whales swimming through the guitars and then lobsters pushing guitars up the hill. Because it's a mixture of the body and what the soul is thinking about. It becomes a very complicated dream. But we've got a third element, and that's the soul world. It could be that it hears something from upstairs that it doesn't even understand, but it drags that down into the dreamscape because it's disassociated, it's floating around because it's not busy with the body. Can't tell it to do any mitzvahs at that time. Then you get a really mixed up thing. There's going to be a flood in Tunisia while I'm getting chased up the road by a whale while I'm trying to fix a guitar. And then you wake up in the morning, there's a flood in Tunisia. Not that there were any whales pushing guitars up the hill with a nose, but the flood in Tunisia thing will flood somewhere up, you understand? Now, this graphic equalizer doesn't remain still. Let's pretend that we play with a dial. Okay, DJ, look at this. I'm moving the dials about. If we've got body, soul, and spiritual world, if I've got hardly any input from the body, for whatever reason, which is why it's more important if you have a dream just before you wake up in the morning. That's what Pharaoh said. The Torah said, I woke up in the morning. All the digestive issues of going to bed last night are over. I went back to bed in the morning, Noch, and I had this dream. So it's very unlikely to be from chemicals that are made in the body. Then you've got the soul is involved in what it's thinking about. But then you've got a tremendous amount of input from the spiritual world. That dream could contain spiritual data. Dream option number two. Before bed, I had the most horrendous shawarma covered in chili and chemicals and preservatives. It was awesome. The best shawarma ever. Those chemicals are brilliant. I don't know what they put on them, but give me more. The problem is my liver was like, oh no, it's shawarma night. Oh, do you know how much I have to process here? I was like churning out hydrogen peroxide all night. I don't know what he puts in here, but he expects us to clean it all up out of the hepatocytes. We can't really do anything with just hepatocytes. You're going to lose so much on a tape. I know, you're meant to be here. Now the soul is obviously thinking about something, but for whatever reason the neshama has no input from upstairs whatsoever. That kind of dream is just an outcome of the physical processes. The third kind of dream, which is what the brothers were accusing Joseph of, as well, because you think about this all day, all you think about is guitars and lobsters. That's all you think about. Of course it's going to come out in your dreams. That's where you have a little bit of physical input. No spiritual input whatsoever. But almost all that dream is to do with the soul musing. So when Joseph was saying, oh, you all bowed down to me. They're like, yeah, because you're always thinking about how much better than us you are. You get the special coat and your favourite son and you think you're better than everyone else. He goes, no, I'm trying to tell you this is a spiritual world dream. And they're like, yeah, right. You're only telling us this because you genuinely think that you're better than us. That's why they hated him. His father held it in mind. His father, hold on, let's see what happens here. Could be it's type one, not type three. But the truth is we don't know. We don't know how the sliders work. In each dream, there are signs. Pharaoh got up in the morning and said, I had a dream dafka in the morning. And it was really disturbing. So then after that dream, I went back to bed and got up in the late morning, early afternoon. And I had another terrifying dream. This is a very big sign to say it's not coming from the body. Could be soul musing. Could be spiritual world. But it's unlikely if it's the... Now, what did he say? He had two dreams. One was an ear of grain that looked absolutely beautiful. 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 And then a really nasty ear of grain came up, just a stick of wheat, and ate that stick of grain that was really nice, and he didn't get any fatter. And it terrified him. Notice it's not a particularly terrifying dream. Terrifying, you should know a very important thing in the halacha. You know, in the siddur at the back, there's something called an amelioration of a dream. If you have a very scary dream, you should ameliorate it in front of three people. Now, the Gemara explains not all scary dreams need amelioration, but some dreams which aren't scary at all require it. Let me explain. Let's say you've got this terrible scary thing of maybe being chased up a hill by a giant whale and a lobster, and then falling down hundreds of thousands, you're absolutely terrified. But then you wake up and it goes, oh, it was a dream. You're not affected by it. But then you have another game, another dream, where you, I don't know, you're playing a game of cards and you lost. Okay. Then you wake up and your mum is schwitzing. You're in like a cold sweat. You're terrified. You know something's up. That requires amelioration. Even though the data in the dream is not intrinsically terrifying, you're not being run, you know, chased down the road by a terrifying monster. That's not what's happening. It's just a push of the thing. But because you are totally freaked out by it, that's the key. Because when the shaman realizes it, it knows what it's trying to tell you. Do you hear what I just said? It's very important. You'll get that. Pharaoh woke up terrified. For what? A piece of wheat being eaten by another piece of wheat. What's so scary about that? Like a big, nasty monster with huge teeth about to... No, it was wheat and he was terrified. Then went back to bed. And then what happened? He had a beautiful cow. Beautiful cows come out the Nile. Very, very important for the Egyptian concept. And they were beautiful and fat and great. Oh, really, really nice cows. And then nasty, withered, horrible, scrawny cows came out the Nile afterwards. And they ate the nice cows. And they didn't get any fatter. Then he woke up and he goes, ah, you've got to sort this out. I'm terrified. Joseph, nobody could interpret the dream for him. Joseph comes along and says, this is Pashut. This is Das Pashut. It's easy. Your dreams are one idea. The Nile, which is the source of nutrition for Egypt, is sprouting forth good and bad, right? Now, what do you think of with wealth in this generation? Give me symbols of wealth. Tell me. I want to hear it.
Yacht and gold.
Super yachts in San Moritz. Okay, what else apart from super yachts?
Gold.
What else? Okay. Cars. What else?
Houses.
These things are things that we don't think of wheat grains and cows and cattle because those aren't social representations for us. But they were for Pharaoh. If a guy has a dream of getting solid gold 24 karat Mercedes Benzes or Bentleys or Rolls Royces or whatever it is, and they'll get smashed up by Nissan Micras or whatever that are all battered or Fiat Panda 4x4s, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, I'm trying to go. That's symbolizing wealth, prosperity, and poverty, or whatever it is, in that social representation. It's just coming out of his head. The concept is upstairs, but it's being manifested by the social representations you have in your mind. Do you hear what I'm saying? So for Pharaoh, the Nile, which was the source of all this wealth and power and irrigation of Egypt, was spawning forth really nice stuff, and then suddenly spawned forth really nasty stuff. But whatever the stuff is irrelevant. You could have had 50 more dreams, all with different symbolism, and it's irrelevant. It's all the same idea. The idea is that it's neshama picked up. He's a Gentile, he has a neshama, and he picks up this too. What he picked up was, there's going to be years of plenty, followed by years of famine. And the famine will be so bad, that even if it eats up those previous years, you won't notice it. The wheat was eaten by other wheat, the cows were eaten by other cows, and Dafka kept saying, but you couldn't notice it. He didn't know the meaning of that. The point was, Joseph went straight to the point and said, what's happening is that the plenty that you're about to experience will be totally overshadowed by the loss and the want that you'll experience following it. Irrelevant of the grain and the cows, not to do with grain and cows, it's to do with the whole concept. Do you hear that point? That soul, that was a soul spiritual data. It was repetitive. It came in the morning. It had clear signs, which an individual who could interpret it could easily see, meant something unique. Not all dreams are like that. Not all dreams are like that. Regarding Burger Bob's, could be something came in. Could, so there was some data, you know, going wrong. It could be, but it, you know, who knows? Let's see this explained now. All that was to explain the words, the Mazal sees it. What this means, at the very bottom of the page, what this means is that the matters of the higher worlds, Olam HaYetzira and Olam HaBriya, do indeed reach the divine soul, but they don't reach man's thoughts and intellect. That's Nefesh HaSichlis and Nefesh Bahamis. So the body's reaction and awareness of them is next to nil, but not utterly nil. Top of page 189. Here's where it gets really, really interesting. The highest wisdom deemed it appropriate to divide the day into two parts, one for activity and the other for rest. The daily cycle is thus divided into day and night, being the time of activity is daytime, and night is the time of rest. God also gave living creatures a nature causing them to sleep, so that both they and their spirits should rest from their normal activity. At that time, when they are at rest, as it were, their strength is renewed, they get a recharge, both physically and spiritually. Spiritually being, it could be Nefesh Bahamas. That spirituality could be genetic, as it was not truly spiritual at that level. And they awake in the morning, if you're crepuscular, if you're dineural, if you're nocturnal, again ready for their daily tasks. Now, when man sleeps, his faculties rest. His senses are quiet, and his mind is relaxed and hushed. The only thing that continues to function is his dimion, is his imagination. I pointed this out in the first session. The most important human faculty is dimion. Imagination never, ever turns off. It is the engine of the mind. Everything we experience is tinged by and filtered through the faculty of imagination, where you can take abstract concepts and apply them to different things. Even when you're asleep, this is going. It doesn't happen in a coma. And from what I understand, in a general anaesthetic either, people don't dream, because it's an induced form of coma, it's an artificial coma. In a coma where the body has turned off, even dimion turns off. But generally, dimion clocks on from the minute you're born all the way through the rest of your life.
Is that what we call brain activity?
Yes. Not all brain activity is dimion, but dimion is brain activity.
No, when somebody's in a coma and they say the brain activity is gone.
No, brain activity, there's some brain activity obviously there, otherwise that's death. If there's no brain activity at all, then that's death. The brain activity, the key point of brain activity for humanity that is absolutely vital is dimion, because it's the root of everything. It's the most important that everything will be focused through there into our daily lives. You imagine what the day's going to be. So you're going to dress appropriately. You don't know unless you stand outside completely naked and then stand like, oh, it's cold, I'll go and put something on. No, you look outside and you like, I imagine when it's that kind of grey, it's going to be this kind of temperature, this kind of clothing will fit. All those things are abstract concepts. I don't mean like standard imaginative play or something. I'm talking about the concept of abstract associations, which is what I'm calling dimion, which is imagination. When man sleeps, his faculties rest, his senses are quiet, and his mind is relaxed and hushed. The only thing that continues to function is his imagination. And it's this, the imagination, that conceives and envisions various images. I talked last week about the avnate, the belt that the kind Godel wore around his chest, which had pictures all over it, specifically to allude to imaginative concepts. When you think in your mind, you're often thinking pictures or images of things, and that's why it was wrapped around his heart, which is generally considered to be the seat of emotionality in man. Some of these images arise from the individual's experiences while awake. Soul musing, right? Others may be the result of substances that rise to the brain from food all from the body itself, reacting to medicine or environment or standard processes. That's the body, that's physical. Such are the stimuli for normal dreams. Those which are experienced by everyone. God also decreed that the bond between the body and the divine soul should be somewhat loosened, i.e. disassociated or dislocated but not severed, while man sleeps. The portions of the soul from Ruach and above. Now that's why you need the picture. Ruach and above, people. That's Ruach and up. That means you can't speak when you're asleep. Or if you do, you're mumbling. It's interesting that... Oh, so I've got so much to discuss about REM sleep being the lightest phase of sleep. The deepest of sleep, you're not technically dreaming. So much to talk about the different brainwaves at that time. But basically, from the Ruach and up are loosened. They're loosened. And they then rise and dislocate, not sever. I've got dislocate or disassociate themselves, I'm changing that word, from the body. Only in one portion, the nefesh habahamis, the animalistic soul, which is purely physical, remains with the lower animal soul. That nefesh is the nefesh asichlis. The nefesh asichlis is the intellectual component of man, which is in of itself the end jack plate of the nefesh bahamis. That's the body part. The freed portions of the soul, which are actually spiritual, can then move about in the spiritual realm wherever they are allowed, depending upon their clearance level, depending upon, you know, the pass card that they're, you know, hanging around the next kind of thing, you know, I mean, it depends what runes they're allowed in. The higher the level, the higher the clearance. The yechidah never has anything to do with the body. It's at the highest anyway, but the neshama now moves around, the ruach moves around, and they can interact and associate with such spiritual beings as the angels in Yetzirah, in Olam HaYetzirah, who oversee natural phenomena, and some angels associated with prophecy. First time we've mentioned that word in the Sefer, and it is at the end of this chapter that we're going to discuss the concepts of prophecy, what prophecy is. Bottom line, prophecy is just a heightened state of consciousness. It's not God talking to you. A very high state of consciousness is what we call prophecy. It's basically, if you're on dial-up, 56k dial-up, you suddenly jump up to fiber. Okay, that's really the way to think. Most people are on 56k dial-up, you know, with a phone going. Okay, suddenly you get a fiber upgrade. It's like, there's such a ton of data which flows through. You've got to be a receptacle fitting for that. Such a ton of data flows through, that's what we would call prophecy. It's not God talking today. Could be. Sometimes God wants to commune with an individual and he would utilize fiber broadband, as it were. He would utilize prophecy to do that. But not all prophecies like that. The prophecy that you hear about in Tanakh, where you've been told about it, is like that. But that's actually a very small amount of prophecy, because there are 1.2 million prophets in Israel. 1.2 million. 600,000 men, 600,000 women throughout our whole history. And that's excluding that around about 4.7 million people that stood at Mount Sinai and all experienced prophecy as well. Before Samuel, they were generally used to locate lost objects, called seers, generally used to locate lost objects. All right. And Shadim, demons, they can sometimes interact. We will talk about what they, remember we talked there in Olam HaShadi, they're in a world that is neither physical nor spiritual. There's an access that Neshama may have to that as well. What the freed parts of a person's soul actually will experience while the person sleeps will depend upon a variety of factors. You can write in their contrast at page 77 and page 209, if you'd like, for those people taking notes. When these higher levels of soul perceive something, they can sometimes, and that's a really important word, people, they can sometimes transmit it step by step down the chain. Now look, think about it. If the neshama gets some data, how would the neshama get that to you? Anthony. Just a random pick on. Sorry. And if the neshama was walking about and bumped into something, goes, "Oh, the 3:30 at the is going to be Charlie's pride. Charlie's pride. Is that, oh, really? Charlie's pride. Going good to firm. Okay, says, wow, really? Yeah. Now, you're in a shaman. You're just floating about in a shaman land. How on earth are you going to get your body when you wake up to know? Get down there and put all that you've got on Charlie's pride at 3:30. Going good to firm. How would you possibly... How's it going to work? What are you going to interface with? That's the problem. You hear the question? Let's say you do get this GCHQ transmission of Diana on the phone and you want to tell people about it. But in the meantime, you're a disembodied soul. Your body's sleeping. When that body wakes up, how are you going to get that in its... What are you going to do? Is the wife going to answer for you? That is such an outstanding marriage. I don't ask me, ask my wife. It's fine. Okay, I don't mind. It's just, you know, it's took a good one.
It's interfacing with the Ruach, isn't it?
It's interfacing. Ah, that was a very good choice there. Bing! 10 points! It interfaces with the Ruach! And then what happens, Loretta?
Oh,
you
that,
see?
That then interfaces with
the Nefesh Hasichlis! It's got to go down the chain! And the Nefesh Hasichlis will then interface with Nefesh Bahamas and start thinking about it. Now, think about it, the higher up the data comes from, the more messed up the channels are. It's very oxymoronic. In fact, the higher the data you get, the more, not pollution, distortion. What's the right word?
Abstraction,
distortion, loss of content data, filtration,
interference.
That's a great, in fact, let's just stick with that. The more inter, I like that. 57.5 points. You can pick up a chocolate bar on the way out. There's a lady there. How many points did you earn? 57.5. Oh, you get a chocolate bar with a yummy, gooey caramel centre. That's why they're more interference. Now, really, that means that the strongest elements, if the Ruach finds it out, if the Ruach finds it out, he can automatically talk to the Nefesh HaSichlis much more easily than a Shoma. The problem is the Ruach doesn't have as much clearance as an Shoma. Think about it. A guy, look. Think about it. The guy at the very, very top of SIS, the Secret Intelligence Service, that is commonly known as MI6. If you bumped into him, the kind of stuff he knows in his head is ridiculous. What would he say to you? If you had that kind of clearance, what would he say? But if you met one of the lower downs who's a street agent, he's more likely to give you data you can actually act upon. Do you know what I'm saying? But that's nowhere near. He doesn't understand that as high as the head of the service. Because he doesn't understand the whole big picture. Do you understand what I'm saying? So actually, the higher you get, the more susceptible it is to interference and distortion. Do you hear what I'm saying? Is this making any sense? Not really, no. Is it making sense? Making sense? Making sense? Making sense? So really, sometimes it's better to get stuff from the Ruach. Because at least you can get it. But the truth is, the Ruach is like, I don't know what it means. And the Shabbos is like, I know what it means, but I can't tell you because it's so abstract. Because the way that it gets data is so spiritual. And we're so physical and concrete. I'm just going to carry on. If you get it, you get it. You don't, you can re-listen to it.
It's just ironic. It's just side off topic.
Okay, you got one mission. Go for it.
The person who was head of GCHQ at the time, Diana, sitting in this thing here.
In what thing here?
The
head of GCHQ was in this base of Medrash.
Yes.
Really?
Who's at the time of Diana.
At the time.
He's not married, he's retired.
Wow. And here we are talking about him in the very same base of Medrash. I don't know who he is, and if I did, I probably shouldn't. So you don't have to tell.
Or
I'd have to sign a piece of paper saying I won't tell.
He came to my bar mitzvah and he was talking about this thing because he was interested in converting to Judaism.
Really? Okay, it's a very interesting side point that the head of GCHQ was interested in converting to Judaism and was studying in this base of Medrash. I don't know what to tell you. It's really interesting, Andy. Thank you. I don't know what else. A very unusual piece of trivia. Okay, no, really, it is. I mean, I don't know what to say about that.
How do we know that it's come from the right place and not the wrong place?
I answered the email. In the email, this person said to me... Well, this person said to me, what am I going to do if I get these vivid dreams telling me to buy over Bebby's Burger? I went to Rabbi Yaakov Hillel. Have you heard of Rabbi Hillel? Rabbi Yaakov Hillel is an Englishman, originally from the outside of Greater London, and he studied in Gateshead, then became a master Kabbalist, has opened up many Kabbalistic yeshivas, and is well known as one of the main Mekubalim, main Kabbalists of this generation. And I had private time with him in his private Kabbalistic office, which is a secret office inside actually one of the buildings that he lives in. He's got like a, it's unbelievable, he's kitted it out. I got in there, I was like, wow, there's some really great Sforim on the shelf. And I said, I asked him some of these questions. He said to me a very interesting thing, and I'd like to give it to you as if I hear like that, to say it as clearly as he said to me. He said like this. And this is what I said to this person when they said, what do I do about these dreams? The answer's like this. Today, in today's generation, now there's reasons for this, because we don't have a base of Migdash and the world is lacking tikkun. We've got lots of tshuva, but no tikkun. The world is, it's like, you know, I saw a picture called the other side of the Maldives. The Maldives are a kingdom which has the lowest, highest point of elevation of any kingdom on earth. The highest point in the Maldives is 2 meters above sea level. 2 meters. That's it. The highest point of land is 2 meters above sea level. The Maldives have some beautiful places to visit, which maybe if I get my luxury yacht, I may swing by sometime. But there is another side to the Maldives. They've got nowhere to put their rubbish. And one of the points of the islands there, if they're made of atolls, really, is totally covered in stinking refuse. And I mean, they don't know what to do. They can't have landfill. There's nowhere to fit. They're atolls. They don't have land to dig up and fill in. And they can't chuck it into the Barrier Reef for all kinds of problems. And they can't chuck it into the water. And they don't have, frankly, the facility to go far enough out into international waters and dump. They just don't know what to do with it. And all these tourists come in, you know, and chuck everything. And they just want to dump their bins. And they're going to rebuild it. And there's a huge, stinking pile of rubbish in the Maldives. It is disgusting. Spiritually, we're living at a time where there's more and more spiritual refuse that is piling up without a base of Migdash to sweep it away. When data comes in today, we are unsure in the majority of cases if the data has been so corrupted or come from an impure root or source, and we are down here at ground zero, literally in a landfill site. And then we get some of that data. He told me that today we can never really be sure whether something's come from a pure root. So if an individual is getting transmissions, messages, dreams, etc., he particularly is against utilizing anything to do with it, because he says you just can never know that it's clean. So basically, in today's generation, now Rav Shishon Raphael Hirsch does say that at the end of days, prophecy will come back. It has to, for part of the messianic revelation. But that's a very different kind of that's a very different transmission, as we're going to discuss. If you have these dreams, as I said to this person that emailed me, you should be very careful about making major life decisions, even though they bought, you know, Bobby's Burgerette or whatever it was and did very well. The problem is that we really never know whether it's coming through clean. And I said, before you make major life decisions, speak to an orthodox, capable rabbi who has a specific interest in these areas and try to schmooze it out with them. Okay, because you frankly, it takes decades of spiritual refinement and learning to be able to suss out what is the good from bad. And frankly, today there's so much bad that there may be so little good of worth in it that it's very difficult to go rooting around in this kind of thing. In previous generations, maybe somewhat differently, but today that's what he said. And that's from Rabbi Yaakov Hillel, who is a Rosh Hashiva and a very, very famous Kabbalistic student and teacher. Okay?
Where does it come from?
We did say that the Neshama can sometimes be in touch with Shadim.
Right. So it could come from there.
We're going to talk about it. There's also negative spiritual forces of angels as well, which we're going to discuss later. Okay. What is high... Now, let's actually... just what you've said. The very bottom of page 189... When these higher levels of the soul do perceive something in a true spiritual world way, in one of these dreams, in a dream which is from the spiritual world, mainly spiritual, even when that does happen, They can sometimes, but not always, transmit it step by step down until it finally reaches the animal soul, the Nefesh Bahamis, where you would experience that in the form of an imaginative concept. A dream, an image, a visage. The imagination is then stimulated by these upper concepts, but it's just physical. It's animal. Our imagination is the same as a beluga whale, as it were. It's created the Nefesh Bahamas, Nefesh Asichlis, like a chimpanzee or a very intelligent creature, and forms images in a normal manner that it would ever just, it just churns out the imagination. A person can then see this as a quote-unquote dream. And that doesn't mean all dreams are prophecy, or all prophecies are dreams or anything like that. What it means is that when data like this is transmitted, the method of utilization in the human mind that's utilized is the imaginative dreamscape. It's like, not every email you get is from GCHQ, although I'm sure they've got them all. And then the guy from GCHQ goes, actually, yes, we do. But when you do get a mail from GCHQ, it'll come in the form of email. Do you hear what I'm saying? Not every dream you have will be with spiritual content at all. But when you do get spiritual content, it'll come in the form of a dreamscape. Because that's the tool in the human mind which is utilized in order to clothe these concepts with an idea. It's a tool that the human mind uses to clothe these concepts with an idea that a human being can understand.
That's the step down
transform. It's a rectifier. If you want to talk old school tube technology, it's a rectifying diode. That's right. It's a rectifier. It will transform it. It will rectify the current from AC to DC. That doesn't mean that every time the current comes in, it's got something of worth. But when it does, it has to go through that diode. That's the part of the brain that we're talking about. Now, the thing, very top of the page, before we lose traction. The things perceived by the higher soul, neshama, however, may, listen to this, Ralph. Listen to this, Clive. Did your wife ever call you Ralph? So actually, once I did. The things perceived by the higher soul, however, may be true or false. They may be false. Not all the data knocking about at GCHQ is true. Some of it's a false flag. Some of it's misinformation. Really, sometimes you could be sent, you know, we actually see this, it's actually discussed, when misinformation was sent by heaven to humanity to misguide it. God actually sent a false flag data. to do with Canberra, I could talk, it's going to be in one of the second we're going to discuss. The things perceived by the higher soul, however, may be true or false, depending on the means through which they are experienced. Also, I want to add here something. Depends who you are, people. At the end of the day, you're the machine at the end of this line, right? Now, if you are filling your mind up with all kinds of treif, and I don't mean necessarily non-kosher food products, I mean your mind is full of treif. So you come here, I remember I once went to a shir and the rabbi said, it's beautiful, I think it was Rabbi Yaakov Asher Sinclair that said this. He was John Sinclair, who was one of the first men to own a multi-track recording studio in the United Kingdom. He produced Foreigner and Queen and was in Moonlighting. The Hollywood show Moonlighting was on TV. And he became a rabbi and he said, he got up and he talked and he said, you know, I'm not going to brainwash you, but probably quite a lot of you could do with a good clean up there. It's a very profound thing to say. Brainwashing, the concept of brainwashing is I make you believe what I want you to believe, etc. That's not what he's saying, that you could have a lot of junk, you could do the toothbrush and just clean it. There's a lot of bad processes, bad thought processes which are in there. If your machine, which is receiving all this, that's also, of course, going to cloud this. You're the lens. You're the final date. If your mind is unclear anyway, if you're a very confused person, if you're getting confused data on the top of that, then where's it going to go anyway? The more unrefined you are, then of course you can get the best data in the world. Look, if GCHQ want to send a message to an agent, they're going to send it to James Bond or something. They're going to get the top, 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 top human resource they've got. There's some bloke in Sainsbury's who, you know, couldn't really bake the bread. So he's now, you know, looking at, you know, the chicken section. And they give it to him. They go, you know, the Crimson Cow will fly tonight. And he's like, Crimson Cow's now there on aisle six. We done it. No, not those. The Crimson Cow will fly tonight. Well, you got a flight, mate. Do you know what? He's not going to go anywhere. Because he just simply isn't. It's not going to do anything. So it, now you may still get the data, but it may not get it because of your limitations. You've got to ask who's asking the question. Who's asking the question is just as important as where they're getting the data from. Someone goes to Rabbi and says, you know, how to dream about this. Who's that person? Very important. You're the end of the system because your dhimmi and your imagination is the final lens. The things perceived by the higher soul, however, may be true or false depending upon the means through which they are experienced. You're part of that, by the way. Not just the actual transmission. The concept itself, whatever it is then transmitted to the imagination and depicted in a normal fashion as in any other dream. If that dream originated from the body or the soul musing or whatever it is, it's just being processed by your brain. Now, sometimes this information is greatly confused and intermingled with distorted images arising from the various substances that enter the brain physically. While at other times, the information is received very clearly. Depends. You know, there's actually, the Gemara actually talks about it. All the dreams that we have during the year generally are stubble. That's the term that Gemara Brachos uses, but not the dreams on the first night of Rosh Hashanah. First night Rosh Hashanah, there's so much going on upstairs, and you are in an enhanced spiritual state, whether you know about it or not. The dreams on first night Rosh Hashanah tend to have more import and more clarity than on every other night of the year. If something happens first night Rosh Hashanah, you have an extremely vivid and clear dream, and you are moved by it, either positively or negatively, that's something to talk over with someone. First night Rosh Hashanah. Okay? Now, that's depending now upon time. Remember, we've got lots of different factors. What part of the soul gets the data? Where it gets the data from? What parts of the soul it has to talk through to get down to you? What brain it's dealing with? What's in your skull? Your brain, your life experiences, you're a limiting factor. What state you're in, what you ate before bed, whether you're in a good mood or a bad mood. That all affects it. And then finally, you've got the time of the year. You are, by the way, not you're in a world, and there's night and day and months and seasons, and that also affects things. Where the stars are, if it, what is a season, if not the Earth's relative position to the sun? When the Earth is far away from the sun, we call that winter. And when the Earth is closer to the sun on its elliptical orbit, we call that summer. Those are things that we call astronomical changes. Rosh Hashanah is a particular astronomical alignment, which also affects things, because of course, as we know from our picture, already in this physical world, Olam Asiya Elyon, the world of a function, of world of action that we live in, the world of action is the stars. Okay. A person can sometimes receive information and knowledge about his future in this manner. Because really, what's future for you is going on ever presently for Hashem. Hashem experiences things at all times at once. And upstairs, they're not bound by time like we are. So you may find out things which you think are in future for you, but actually you're being born now, you're passing your driving test now, you're having your bar mitzvah now. God's not bound by time, you are. So you may find out about things that's going to happen because they're actually happening now anyway. And you bump into that and you recognize that as something which is relatively close. This occurs as a result of God's decree. Sometimes he will send data through. This information is then revealed to Dafka the Neshama. It's very clunky now to use the word soul. When someone says to you, you know, my soul sensed it, you now, as experts, can turn around and go, well, which part of your soul? Which of the six are we talking about, sir? A little bit of gross anatomy here. If someone goes to a doctor and says, my body hurts. You go to your doctor and says, my body hurts. What's the first question he's going to ask? What? You know? My foot hurts. You need a lobotomy. I'll get a saw. No, my foot, doctor, my foot. Oh. Hey, you said your body hurts, right? Yeah, I can cure that. Lobotomy cures everything. That's my foot. It's my foot. That's just gross anatomy. Foot, leg, arm, torso. You know what I mean? So too, when you say the soul, you have to be very specific now. Are we talking neshama, chai, yechida, nefesh, nefesh asichlis, ruach, nefesh bahamis, guf? What are we talking about? The information is then revealed dafka to the neshama. I'm not even going to use the word soul there. By one of God's servants. Whatever it is. He actually says it. Of whichever type it may be. It is then transmitted down to the nefesh and visualized by the imagination, the dimion in the brain, either clearly or obscurely. Clive and Adrian. As decreed by the highest wisdom. Now, regarding such dreams, the scripture says in Eof 33, 15 and 16, in a dream, in a vision of the night, God opens the ears of man. Now, what's wrong with that pasuk? Why isn't it your eyes? He opens the ears of man? What is the quintessential Jewish statement? Say it out. I can't hear it. Say it for the tape. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. The special six words that we have to say twice a day, every day. It's also what we have to say just before we depart from this earth. You've got to say it, and we say it before bed as well. Now, what is the quintessential Jewish statement? Hear, deeply comprehend, Israel. The Lord your God that you may see in different facets in your life is actually the Lord that's one. I ain't bits and pieces. You may see me as filtered through in angry or happy or sad or whatever it is. I'm all one. Now, what's the Shema business? Say, Ra'ei Israel. See, O Israel. You've got to hear this. This mummish. This world is considered the world of sound. The next world is considered the world of sight. The Kabbalists talk about it like this. What does this mean? A guy, Rachmanides Litzlan, that's blind. Heaven forbid. A guy's blind. A sumer. The Gemara's called a sumer. Known as Saginaha, bright of eyes. We never like to say something bad. So the Gemara always couches things in a positive way as not to be obscene. So we don't use the term sumer, a blind person. We call them a Saginaha, a bright of eyes. So that's what we call, interestingly, a base olam is a base chaim, a house of life. But what's a base chaim? It's a cemetery. We don't like to say, you know, it's a place with lots of dead people. We say, oh, we don't always speak, the Torah speaks with very clean lips. I'm gonna go, someone who's bright of eyes walks in the door. They've got a white stick. And he says to a person who's next to him, what does this room look like? What's in it? So what would you do? You'd start to describe him, the room. It's got furniture, it's got pews, with foldy uppy, flippy downy seats, with boxes in front of them, a classic synagogue look, if you remember that. And it's quite light coloured wood, and the carpet is blue, and there's lots of things on the walls where the books are, and there's an iron in the middle, and there's a bimra with a couple of candlesticks on. And he's on it, and he's building up a picture in his head, right? Now, let's say you've never been in this room before. You walk in. Do I need to tell you any of that? It's an immediate revelation. The revelation of the eyes is greater than the revelation of the ears because there's no step up in information processing. Everything just hits you. Shema means you have to bolt it together. It's not Ra'ei because you aren't on the level to be able to perceive things in one go like that at the moment. You're in a dark physical world. So you have to go through and piece it. As I'm speaking to you, words are coming out and you don't know yet what I'm saying until I finish a sentence, then a paragraph. What you're doing is taking, okay, he's talking about this, and he's talking about whales chasing him up the road with a lobster up. Isn't that, whew, that's a bit abstract. But hold, you know what a whale is, not a lobster. And then you want to say, oh, he's talking about a dream. But you didn't get that. When I started talking about whales, you didn't know what I was talking about. I just sounded like it was bonkers, yeah? And then suddenly you justified, oh, okay, that bonkerness was because it's a dreamscape. But you didn't know that when I started that. But if I'd have shown you my dream on like a cinema screen, and you saw me running away from a whale and I'm chasing a lobster up the nose of that, then you see it's one of my dreams. I don't have to tell you anything. Do you hear that? That's why Shema Yisrael. You're going to go through your life. You're not going to be able to perceive me, says God. You can't see me because I'm not on this plane of dimension. I'm so close. I'm so real. I'm more real than what you can perceive. But you can piece it together piece by piece as you go through life. That's Shema Yisrael. You'd have to piece it. Eov says, in a dream and a vision of the night, God opens the ears of man. Don't think that this dimion that you're getting is actually the thing. You're not seeing the thing. Your imagination is clothing a concept. When Pharaoh, let's say his neshama was upstairs, and the neshamas are over there, and they're bumping into each other, and they're getting ready for like famine and plenty. In the mazalus, whatever that looks like, when you move planets around to influence famine and plenty. Now that neshama understands, oh my gosh, if you move that over there, it's going to be famine and plenty. But that's moving planets around and angels do something. But he gets it. Then he comes back into his physical body and he's trying to tell him, my gosh, there's going to be plenty and famine. What is he going to think of with plenty? Gold, Mercedes Benzes, super yachts, plenty. That's not what it saw. That's what it's been translated and transduced to. Then what does it think of when it's going to think of famine? Scrawny cows, scrawny wheat, scrawny cars, scrawny yachts, whatever. It's irrelevant. The visions that you're getting in the sleep aren't the actual vision. They're what the imagination does to the concepts. That's why he opens your ears. It's an understanding concept which then has to be clothed with a... If you've ever sat and you've managed to sit through an advanced maths lecture, the difference between pure and applied maths is that pure maths is just pure maths. It's just totally abstract. Applied is, okay, let's talk about a box, and the box is falling off of a... And, you know, it's a thing. And why is it sometimes easier to study applied maths? Because you're talking about stuff. And you can envisage things and changes of forces. You're thinking about things. Totally pure math. It's like Greek letters on a wall saying that if sigma is over there, then it's got a vector and it does this. But who's to say? It's very, 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 very... When we're thinking about things, we're getting the most abstract concepts from upstairs than having to clothe them with ideas in our own mind. That's why no two dreams are the same. No two people are experiencing life exactly the same way. That's why Yosef said to Pharaoh, all these dreams are one idea. It's just the way you're getting it. All the people were saying you're going to have seven daughters. Then you're going to lose seven daughters because it's seven. The seven's irrelevant. It means lots. Lots. There's going to be lots. And there's going to be good times. There's going to be bad times. Get to the crux of it. Your mind is clothing those ideas because it gets what's really going on upstairs in an abstract way that has to put it through in very grub, thick, cut, gashmias things like cars. You didn't go upstairs and see cars, a golden Mercedes Benz. There's the great eternal golden Mercedes. That unbelievable Mercedes which has unbelievable mileage powers. It's not, there's no Mercedeses up there. There's the concept of wealth, which to you in your Western car building minds that you've been polluted by all the glossy magazines saying Mercedes is it if you've got it. That's how you're understanding it. That's the key. Now, if you see things in a bad way, or if you've got a lot of like chemicals in your body that are knocking out, you're going to see things in a bad way anyway. But in a vision at night, God will open the ears of man. Your imaginative powers will be able to bolt together concepts like a sentence or a paragraph and clothe them in applied ideas to understand the abstract data being presented to something purely spiritual. And yet your physicality can clothe this idea. You know, there's an idea that the entire Torah, all 5,845 verses, is one long name of God that can be pronounced as one word. Ever heard that idea? It's not a foreign idea, okay? Some people have heard it, some people haven't. One name of God, the whole Torah, one word. All the way through to Israel. Just one word. Just one name of God. The whole thing. The Torah clothes our ideas, which are abstract, into letters and words that mean something for human beings. That's what it's doing. It's a extremely profound pan-dimensional intelligence which is transmitting data through a letter sequence. It's clothing those ideas. The things which are most mystical are hardly clothed. The things which are most physical, you've got lots to talk about. What? When Eliezer was making a shidduch for Avraham Avinu's son, right? Tons and tons and tons of verses. Most of the parsha's taken up. What are the most spiritual things you can think of? What's the most spiritual day of the year? Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah, right? What does the Torah say for Rosh Hashanah? Yom Teruah. Day of Shofar blowing. That's it! What about the whole thing and judging the world and making you king and us sitting down having to have dates and apples and honey? No! Tefillin. Doesn't even tell you what they are. There's hardly any words that can circumscribe that. That's why the Rabbeinu Bahá'í explains, you want to see where the deepest treasures are? Dig where they're the least letters. Because there's less imaginative potential that can clothe that in ink. This concept, that's Rabbeinu Bahá'í, 1257. The more abstract something is, the less it can come down and become concretized. The more physical it is, the more it falls into lots of letters. Sometimes the most potent thing you can say to someone, you can't even express. That's what they say, Moshe Rabbeinu had a stammer. When he came down from Mount Sinai, they said to him, Nu, what did he tell you? And he went, it was like, that's a stammer, right? You can't even express it. How many songs have been written about love? How many paintings have been painted about love? You can't express it because it's too intense a thing. But something which can definitely be expressed. The density of concrete can be put down in a formula. Because it is a physical thing which can be totally clothed and circumscribed. That which is most abstract isn't even mentioned at all in the Torah. What's the one thing in the Torah which you thought for definite it would be mentioned and not a word of it is mentioned? What's the most... Why was the Torah given to us? Come on, people.
Over the next one.
Thank you very much. That was very, very advanced. The Torah was given to us so we could keep mitzvahs, so that we could earn reward, so that we could justifiably get close to God, but in an arena which is fitting for it. Hence, Olam Haba. The whole Torah is only talking about the next world. It's all about the next world. And it doesn't even mention it. Nothing. Not a jot. Nothing. It should be saying at the end of every single verse, do this so that you can gain access to Olam Haba. If you want to get to Olam Haba, probably a good idea not to drink goat's blood. If you want to... It doesn't say anything about Olam Haba. It's the most vital concept, but it's the most abstract. Therefore, it can't be clothed in letter sequence. It's the concept above that which you're reading. Have you ever heard of reading in between the lines? What's the subtext? If you read a book and then you sit down on a play, have you ever gone to a play? And people, you know, have you ever been to a theatre where they're doing Shakespeare and there's a bunch of people sitting there actually turning the pages as they're going? Have you ever seen that? I've seen that. They're sitting at the front and they're literally going through the script and they're going. And they're watching them. Now those people know the material. What they're asking about is how are those actors translating those concepts to us? Are they doing it classically? Or are they doing it in a very nouveau way? What's the intonation? What are they trying to say? Do you hear what I'm saying? Do you hear that? That's a moshul, right? How are they clothing the idea? How are they interpreting the source data? Are you starting to get an idea? That's the concept of dreams. We're just beginning to understand now that function of that human... This is opening like a whole new vista of understanding. Remember, this is not... This is awesome. Yeah, okay.
still struggling. I get everything you've talked about, and I understand it, the concept, but I still can't get the concept of a vision, that in a dream you have a vision, and it opens the ears of ears. How could a vision which is sight open sight?
Clive, I'm telling you that what this is saying is not to be understood on an organ basis. The concept of ears means the bulking together of an intellectual picture piece by piece. Not with a blind guy who walks in and has to... Not with an individual that's sighted and sees everything in an initial... If you saw everything in an initial revelation, having to piece it together, there'd be no unclarity or distortion or interference in the dream. But we are intrinsically, inherently coarse, removed and confused and confuddled because of the actual nature that we have. We've got six complements of soul here, all with their own limitations. Everything's messed up. Has to be. Don't get trapped on a choroid layer versus a cochlea, you know what I mean? That's what we're talking about. Last question for tonight.
May I ask
one? Yeah. How do you go for it?
When Adam was first on the earth, what status of soul did he have? Did he have all six souls?
Yes. There were just